Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Pins and Needles was a labor musical produced by the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union, the ILGWU, late in a labor decade, the 1930s. A tough moment it was, to say the least.
People had now been through 7 or 8 years of the worst depression in American history.
Musical theater historian John Kenrick.
There was still a lot of poverty. There was still an economy in stress. There was still a lot of suffering going on.
It was in that atmosphere that Pins and Needles was born. Harold Rome, then a kid in his 20s, was enlisted to write a review for the Garment Workers Union to perform for its membership, which happened to be using the Princess Theater on 39th Street as its meeting hall. All the performers had day jobs as union cutters, stitchers, seamstresses, so they made their way to the theater at night and on weekends.
And for 18 months, these amateur union members rehearsed in the hall, two or three times a week as weather permitted. There was no air conditioning after all.
So always be upon your guard. Be a man to see a union card.
Pins and Needles opened in November of 1937. Harold Rome and a group of smart book writers, including Mark Blitzstein, had taken the messages and the mood of the time in a particularly lighthearted direction. The composer-lyricist remembered in a 1966 interview the way the show took off.
After the first 2 weekends, it became such an overnight success that the performers were forced to join Equity, and they started as a regular run. I played piano in the pit then.
Pins and Needles took the language of organized labor, activism, and progressive politics and played with it in songs like One Big Union for Two.
We won't have sit-downs inside our gate. We'll never need to arbitrate in one big union for
a dance number called Doin' the Reactionary.
Don't go left, but be polite. Move to the right, doin' the reaction.
And most notably, Sing Me a Song with Social Significance.
Sing me a song with social significance.
This, by the way, is a 1962 25th anniversary recording.
I want a ditty with heat in it.
According to theater critics of the day, it was that light comic spirit that made it work. And they raved, urging people to attend. Even if you don't like the message, they said, you'll love the show.
All the best dictators do it. Millionaires keep stepping to it. The 400 love to sing it.
Ford and Morgan swing it.
And that was why people from carriage society, the carriage trade, were showing up at this thing. The very people they were spoofing were coming and laughing at themselves.
It ran a long time. 1,108 performances.
No other review had ever run so long, and no other commercial Broadway production had had such a run.
Amateur performers are still attracted to Pins and Needles. This week, an updated production opens in Brooklyn, starring members of Families United for Racial and Economic Equality. Harold Rome would be pleased that it's being done in the spirit of the original, with a let's-put-on-a-show attitude and with tongue-in-cheek.
Which is the only way I think you can, in the theater, say serious things in the musical.
Nearly 75 years later, Social Significance meets old-fashioned fun. Could catch on. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fischko.
Are you ready to hear your lesson for today?
Yes, teacher. Yes, teacher.
Are you ready to learn what history has to say?
Yes, teacher. Yes, teacher.
Then take your books and follow me to 1776 A.D. And as the history pages turn, we will see what we can learn.
Yes, teacher. Yes, teacher. Yes, teacher.
In 1776, Tom Paine was writing books with might and main. A Tory said, now man alive, stop giving out with this hilly-bitty jive.